over to the theater of operations in Europe to find out what the hell these things were. Now, the word Foo Fighters come from sort of French and German faux for fire, because they were these fiery, had a luminous corona around them. And but they would disrupt electromagnetic signals. They would have effects on the gravity around an aircraft and other things such as guidance systems, compasses, and what have you. And so we thought, the Americans and British thought, it was a secret Nazi weapon. And we found out through our spies that the Germans thought it was a secret Allied weapon. And of course it was neither. So General Doolittle went over and investigated this and came back to the White House and reported back to President Roosevelt and said, "Sir, these are interplanetary vehicles," I'm quoting. And so began the modern era of a serious concern from the national security level about UFOs. You can argue it went back to the airship scare of late 1890s, where there were massive crafts seen off the coast of California, but there wasn't that much official concern at that point. It was sort of an enigma. But in World War II, because of the type of weapons being developed, both by Hitler and by America, the interstellars, as I call them, became very concerned about what humans were doing on Earth and the risk of us destroying this planet, which I believe, in carefully in analyzing the history of this, that they have an interest in its survival and humanity's survival. And so the president at that point did assemble a group of folks that included Oppenheimer, people who worked on the Manhattan Project, Dr. Vannevar Bush, no relationship to President Bush, and others to look into the issue. By the time we detonated the first atomic bomb, the facilities at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico and Alamogordo, that area, were being overflown regularly by UFOs. And they were very concerned, obviously, that we were developing weapons that could terminate life on the planet. And they could see where this was headed. So this was not something that just happened out of the blue. There's a history here you must understand. In the early days, and I'm talking now from the early mid-1940s until 1956, there was a reasonable level of constitutional oversight by key members of Congress, senior people in the administrations, and the President of the United States. Everything changed in 1956. Now, when we had the only nuclear, and actually technically it's an atomic bomb squadron and not a thermonuclear one that was developed later. Everybody know the difference between atomic and thermonuclear? Atomic bomb is fission, nuclear is fusion, hydrogen. Anyway, the atomic bomb that we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was developed, as you all know, in New Mexico, and was tested at White Sands, and eventually in Roswell, New Mexico, that was the only bomber squadron that had atomic bombs in the world for a number of years before the Soviet Union developed them. And in 1947, there were two or three, I have intelligence recently that indicates there were three so-called flying saucers, discs, flying by and doing surveillance of the 509th Bomber Squadron, which was the only atomic bomb squadron in the world. And they switched on, suddenly, an alleged radar system. Read this document carefully. Now, this, I know it's hard for you to see the original. It's dated 1950. It was to J. Edgar Hoover. The Edgar Hoover building's right near here. And an Air Force source stated that there were three flying saucers recovered in New Mexico. They're described as circular in shape with raised centers, 50 feet in diameter. Each one was occupied by three bodies of human shape, but only 3 feet tall. They're actually about 39 inches tall. In metallic cloth, very fine texture, etc. And it says that the saucers were found in New Mexico due to the fact that the government has a very high-powered radar set up in that area, and it's believed the radar interferes with the controlling mechanism of the saucers. This is a little bit anthropocentric and childish, because if you can go interstellar, you can handle a radar system. What actually happened is that those radar domes had a scalar longitudinal electromagnetic weapon, which is another whole classification of electromagnetic warfare systems that we'll get into later. But suffice it to say, it was an early scalar Star Wars hit. And when they switched that on, at least two of these disks collided. One went down northwest of Roswell. The other one continued and was more intact and was impacted near Socorro, New Mexico. And that's where they actually retrieved the bodies. The ones that was just north of Roswell was obliterated into little teeny pieces, tiny little pieces. Where they did retrieve, and we have Disclosure Project witnesses who have testified to this, who have personally seen what looks like almost hieroglyphic writing on some of the little parts that were retrieved. And I've seen these, and it's very interesting because it's reminiscent of the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics, but not quite the same. Makes you wonder where the pyramids came from. So that event was an early hit. Now, there are some reports of others, but that's the most documented one. This document from the FBI is significant because, obviously, 3 years later, you had one branch of the government trying to find out what the other top secret branch of the government was doing. You can tell by the tone of it. I made inquiries through here and there. So it's a bunch of skullduggery that happens between agencies and competition. And there's always been competition between FBI, CIA, Air Force Intelligence, et cetera, and so on. And this happens not just with the United States. It also happens between allies and alliances. For example, the next document, if you can pull this up, this is one of the most important documents. And by the way, after I briefed the CIA director about all this stuff, the sitting CIA director for President Clinton, which we'll get into in a moment, I got a cache of several thousand of these documents, about 5,000 of them. And they're in my vault. I don't know what to do with them. If we presented what was in them, it would take us from now until 2017. But let me just say that this document was accidentally released by the Canadian government, and if you look at the date on it, 1950, November 21st. How ironic. This is the 65th anniversary of the writing of this document by Wilbur Smith, who had a top secret clearance, and he was tasked by the Canadian government to find out what the Americans were doing. And if you look at page 2, if you go down to page 2 of this, you're going to see just a brief summary, which I think is, there's a whole lot of detail in the document. This is on our website now. You can look it up. Many of you may have seen this one already, but the reason I want to present it is the importance of the document. And it says, the matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher than the H-bomb. Think about that. The H-bomb wasn't detonated until 1952. It was the ultimate doomsday weapon. This project dealing with UFOs and interstellar technologies was more highly classified than the H-bomb. Period. B, flying saucers exist. Period. Their modus operandi is unknown, but a concentrated effort is being made by a small group of headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush, who also worked with Edward Teller, Oppenheimer, and others. And 4, the entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be of tremendous significance. I have a whole dossier that a Canadian put together of the Wilbur Smith investigations on behalf of the Canadian government to find out what in the hell the Americans were doing with these extraterrestrial vehicles.
And you're listening to the voice of Dr. Stephen Greer in a presentation, a four-hour presentation on how the secret government works. And it's essentially an expose starting in the 40s and how it has gone forward. And he is asserting that it is this very high-level secret workings, underpinnings of the extraterrestrial phenomena that led to the secret government. It was in dealing with this, pulling it out of the conventional oversight, that this whole secret government was created, or this secret, if it's not government, collection of politicians in combination with corporate raiders and corporate leaders, and how they took all this information out of oversight of Congress and the government, put it into the corporate world, and begin to use it behind the scenes to control and manipulate. And so there's a very direct connection to the secrecy of this technology that came from these craft, and how it was used to manipulate and dominate civilization on this planet, and to control the economics, to control the economy, as I said, to control the energy systems, so that we would forever be dominated by the need to support these energy systems. And the planet also is considered to be dominated by these systems. So the only way to liberation is information. 212-209-2950. I want to share a little bit more of this presentation with you, but I am asking you to show your support at this time. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And you will receive, for your pledge of $100, this package. It's a two-disc set, the Sirius documentary, Sirius DVD, and CIA UFO Disclosure. That's the name of the gift we're offering you, Sirius DVD and CIA UFO Disclosure. And you'll receive the documentary of the film Sirius as a thank you gift for your pledge. And you also receive the data disc that has the background documenting evidence that this is something that has been seriously under consideration and seriously used as a source of power and control by the military industrial complex, the shadow governments. All those forces behind the scene have been sustaining and supporting themselves through this technology, and through the denial of this technology to humankind. 212-209-2950. At this very moment, we could completely stop using oil. We could completely stop using gas. We could stop using coal. And even the wind and solar, as powerful and as clean as that might be in comparison, we can connect to the energy fields as did Tesla. The technology is here. It's being used. It's been developed behind the scenes, and that's where all the money is going. All the money that disappears out of the budget, out of the Pentagon budgets, out of the operational budgets for each city. Why is the money being drawn out? Why is there no money accessible to build cities and to repair cities or to help people in need? Where is all this money going? It's going into the pockets of the ruling elite, and it's going into these black operations, these shadow operations behind the scenes that are controlling everything that goes on. And the way to stop it is to open up the window and allow the information through. And we're asking you to be part of that, to be part of that movement for truth, to look at this evidence, to examine it for yourself, to decide for yourself. But at least this is the doorway, and we're asking you to walk through that door. We're asking you to pick up the phone and call WBAI. Support WBAI. This is the station that brings you the information. 212-209-2950 is your number to call. $100 pledge of support for WBAI, Sirius DVD, and CIA UFO Disclosure Data Disc. And we don't have the exact same documents that necessarily that Stephen Greer speaks about. He's been getting a lot of his information from sources behind the scenes. But what we do have for you are the CIA UFO files that have been declassified. And there are 260 of these documents on the data disk for you to examine and read through. The table of contents of these documents is there at the top. And it is 55 pages long. That's how many documents that you will have an opportunity to look at. 212-209-2950. And these are documents of evidence of investigations across the globe. This is not just United States. There are reports from South America, Central America, from Russia, from Spain, from Europe. All over the globe, these investigations were followed by the CIA, and we're seeing evidence of it now with these declassified documents. 212-209-2950. So if you wondered and thought, well, if it were true, we would see the evidence, well, the CIA just declassified, well, not just, but it's become readily available, their declassified documents. And we're asking you to pledge and support WBAI. We'll thank you with these two discs, the Sirius DVD and CIA UFO Disclosure, and you'll receive the documentary Sirius and a data disc that we are providing that has all this other information in it. 212-209-2950 is your number to call. And let's see if we can go back to a little bit more of this presentation.
So that this object becomes massless, weightless, no mass, M-A-S-S. So the mass component, and this has to do with angular momentum and things of this sort, of the subatomic particles, can make this object so light that it has no mass, which means if you look at your physics equations, mass, velocity is inversely proportional to mass. Go look it up. So if mass becomes zero, velocity can go to infinity in a given amount of energy, which means you can move into another dimension. It doesn't go to infinity. You go trans-dimensional. We'll talk about this some more later. And this began to be experimented with in the 1920s. A guy named T. Townsend Brown developed a system using crystalline structures and very high voltages going into an object so that an object would begin to levitate. Marcel Vogel, one of the chief engineer scientists for IBM in North Carolina on the Reynolds estate, did the same thing in the 60s and 70s. One of the members of my team and one of our Disclosure Project witnesses worked with Marcel Vogel, doing this with crystalline structures. And it can be crystals, but it can also be nanocrystalline materials such as metallic. So, as you know, most metals and rocks are crystal. Actually, water is crystalline. We're crystalline. So you can put this system around almost anything, and it will begin to become increasingly massless. Now, it doesn't have to be zero mass. Maybe it's 0.1 mass. So it's still materialized, and you see it. But it means, man, can you accelerate this thing? So it means you can, instead of going like the space shuttle at 25,000 miles an hour, you can go at several million miles per hour and take a right turn. And there's no deceleration effect because everyone on board is corrected for 1G. So this is what they began, 1G gravitational force. So this is what began to develop in the 20s, got taken into some Army Air Force projects in the 30s and 40s, and was Adolf Hitler's secret weapon. Adolf Hitler, they weren't making the progress on the atomic bomb that we were, but they had almost perfected gravity control by the time World War II ended. Now, one of the things that the OSS did, the Office of the Special Services, which became the CIA after World War II, they had something, you can look this up, called Operation Paperclip. And Operation Paperclip, a whole book was written on it not too long ago, about how they would put a paperclip on the file of the Nazis that we didn't want to go to Nuremberg and execute, but that whose knowledge was so great that we wanted them as part of our program. We wanted what they knew. So One of these guys is a guy named Wernher von Braun, who, of course, invented the rocket, the V-2 rocket for Adolf Hitler. Hermann Oberth. These were all the giants of rocketry and aerospace for Adolf Hitler. They became the foundation of, brought in by the CIA, what became the CIA, of our space program in the 1940s and 50s, which is how we leapt ahead of the Soviet Union, because we took all those people first, ahead of the Soviet Union. Interesting bit of history. You don't read this many places. But a lot of what I'm telling you is in conventional history books, not the UFO part. That's been sanitized out. That's forbidden knowledge. So as a result, by the time we had those guys and the experimentation that had been done by T. Townsend Brown, whose work became a part of a corporation called the RAND Corporation, which still exists, a huge think tank, we really had something going. You add to this the study of materiel and electronics retrieved from interstellar vehicles that were shot down. So a lot of people say, oh, well, the things we have, are they all just reverse engineered from interstellar ET? I said, no. The laws of the universe are universal, and the mind of man, just like the man of an ET, can unravel the mysteries of the universe. And so it has come to pass. But if you take, we're not starting at zero when we retrieve the objects that were interstellar. We were starting with decades of research in classified electronics, electromagnetic fields, anti-gravity, scalar systems, et cetera, and so on, that had been going on since the time of Nikola Tesla, the true genius of the 20th century, not Albert Einstein, by the way, so who is a minor luminary compared to Tesla. And, sorry, Einstein fans, it's true. By the way, that's why, when Nikola Tesla died, the FBI swooped into his apartment and confiscated all of his secret papers. And how do I know this? I have a document from the Department of Defense demanding that the FBI turn them over and names them for what they are, the secret papers of Nikola Tesla. This is not an urban myth. I have that document. It came in this cache of documents I'm talking about. So
I would really love to continue playing this audio presentation, but it is actually 4 hours long. We could never get through it all, but it's a powerful presentation, and it goes through the whole history up until the current time and what's happening on the scale of economy and oil and world destruction, taking it from its inception to where we are at this time. But it also offers us the solutions through the shared information. We're down to the wire with this presentation. Please do show your support with your phone calls, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We're asking for a pledge of $100, just $100. When you make that phone call, you'll receive the documentary, Sirius, which really talks about all the work and pulls together the work of Dr. Stephen Greer, which is on one hand the disclosure of what's actually taking place in history, but also the presentation of some of these advanced technologies. And in addition, it looks at the actual alien, if you want to think of it that way, are beings that come from other worlds. And then it also looks at the level of consciousness that it requires to enter into communication with stellar beings. 212-209-2950. So all that is in the documentary, Sirius. But in addition to that documentary, we're also offering you the UFO disclosure, the documents that have been released, declassified by the CIA, and it is a collection of PDF files. It's in the PDF format, so everyone can open up into these documents. And we have a total, more or less, of 260 documents from the CIA, along with their links, if you want to go back to the original files online. But also, in that this data disc, we're offering you the audio that we cannot play all of this information. It's just too much to play in the time frame that we have. But you'll have the time to sit and listen to this information through and through. You'll be able to examine these CIA UFO released documents, and you can really form your own opinion, gather the evidence that's being presented to you, and begin to enter into this world with some knowledge rather than just some assertion or belief system. Knowledge is the power. The evidence is here and available for you, but we need for you to make that phone call, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. It is a pledge of $100 to support WBAI, and WBAI is a worthy cause. We are certainly here to be able to open up the world for you, to be able to really examine what's happening in the world, and all these influences undercover are impacting our lives, are impacting the health of the planet, are impacting the future of humanity, whether or not there is a future. Human beings, as Dr. Edgar Mitchell said, we have to inform ourselves. We are the ones that have to wake up and understand and demand the truth and demand that we get access to these technologies that can actually eliminate the dependence on coal and oil and other forms of destructive energy-based systems. 212-209-2950. We can demand disclosure of where the money is headed. What is this money being used for? Why do so many of our tax dollars disappear into these black operations, these dark operations, these mechanisms that in the end take away our rights, our freedoms, and potentially our very lives? 212-209-2950 is your number to call. Show your support for WBAI. We're down to our last few minutes. Take the plunge. Open your mind and examine. And for those of you who have heard of this and do understand that this is true, this is the evidence that you will have to share and to support that which you know to be. 212-209-2950 is your number to call. 212-209-2950. Make that call. It is a pledge of $100. You can honor that pledge using your cards, either credit or debit cards. You can honor your pledge by asking for an invoice and send a check or money order. You can honor your pledge by making an offering in installments if you want to do it that way. 212-209-2950. That's your number to call. We're asking for a pledge of $100, and that pledge is to support WBAI, the radio station that brings you an examination of what's happening in the public view and what's happening behind the scenes. What are the technologies? What are the sciences? What are the politics that lead to war, that lead to the exploitation of the planet, that lead to fiat money, that lead to the exploitation and death of humanity? We have a right to know, we have a right to say something about it, and we have a right to stop it. But in order to do that, we need to know what's happening. We need the information. 212-209-2950 is your number to call. It's a pledge of $100, just $100. When you support WBAI, you can do this. You can do this. We need your phone calls right now. 212-209-2950. Support the work of Dr. Stephen Greer. Support the legacy of Dr. Edgar Mitchell. And support the truth of liberation and freedom that can come from knowing having the real evidence, by seeing the technology that would make a better world possible, by entering into communication with advanced civilizations and having a coherent, loving, really, experience moving forward in our world. It's time for us to say we are tired of the manipulation of the dark masters of our world, and it's time for us to take control, to be sovereign, to be free, and to determine what happens with the economy of humanity. Not that it should be exploited for the few. Not that our planet be exploited for the few. There's no comprehending the motivation behind these kinds of acts, behind the domination through war and exploitation. But human beings can stand up and say no more. 212-209-2950. We need your support at this time. 212-209-2950. We are going to make room for the next program, and we ask you to continue making your phone calls. 212-209-2950. You're listening to WBAI Radio in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis, and this has been a special documentary on Sirius DVD CIA UFO disclosure. Keep your calls coming in, 212-209-2950.
And as the river unwinds, The healing waters flow. There will be mountains to climb and valleys dark as the night, and roads you have never known. Follow the answers to the questions in your soul. Down by the water where the river gates control.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You're listening to WBAI Radio right here in New York City. But of course, we broadcast far beyond New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, parts of Pennsylvania. So we are a great community here in this broadcast area. And we are coming to you this day, the day in which we are asking you to participate in the wellness of WBAI, to participate in the goodness of WBAI Radio. And I am very pleased to be here with you sharing this endeavor. My name is Catherine, Kathy Davis. Many of you know me by that. And I am the founding host of Heart of Mind, sometimes I refer to as Heart of Mind Radio. And Heart of Mind is a program that focuses on our spirituality, our consciousness, and our health, and really looks at the total package. We are mind, we are body, we are spirit, we are soul. We have an outer life in which we engage with each other and the world. We also have an inner life that is rich and full and can really connect us to the deepest part of our being. Our inner life is very important because that really is what reaches into the wisdom of our soul, reaches into the wisdom of nature, reaches into the wisdom of creation, really. And so when we begin to pay attention to what is going on inside of ourselves, then we can really, truly come into connection with that part of us that is so rich. And the world has a tendency to dumb all of that down by imparting stress, by creating a world in which we are tapped out, really. You know, we work every day just to get through the day. We work long hours, and so we find that we are exhausted at the end of the day and really don't have time for that inner contemplation. We tend to just want to chill out, you know. Just give me something mindless to watch or to listen to so that my body can finally relax. And, well, there's nothing wrong with that, really, because I do it. We all do it. We want to just unplug from the madness of the world that we are in many ways tied to, because this is who we are. This is the world we're in. This is the society and culture that we're in. So it's really something for us to carve out for ourselves an opportunity to really make that deep connection, to make the deep connection into who we really are at the soul level. When we do that, it allows us to have a greater expanded insight in what we want to do with our lives, in what our purpose may be, in learning to appreciate our specific gifts that we came into the world to express. And this is really what life is about. It's for us to have that opportunity to express these great gifts. You know, we've come into the world maybe to express through voice, maybe as a singer or as a talk show host, such as what I'm doing right now. Or maybe we come into the world to use our voice through teaching in a classroom, or through sharing spiritual tenets through some kind of spiritual practice or church. You could always tell the difference when someone is working through their inspiration rather than just playing by the numbers. And we can tell the difference within ourselves, whether or not we're just getting through one step at a time, or whether or not we have tapped into an inspirational moment or an inspirational activity. And then it becomes joyful. It becomes something that is expansive and that we can share with each other, whatever this inspiration may be. And I believe that in order to recapture our true humanity, we need to be able to carve a place for this. We need to make time for it, whether it's in the morning, whether it's in the evening, whether it is at a lunch hour, and or perhaps during vacation time. But it's really important to begin to think about this, that I need to establish for myself, declare and demand for myself that time frame when I will be able to truly be the fullness of myself, my creativity, my intelligence, my wisdom. And the program that I will be offering you today is one that really does contribute and carve out this very thing. And we are going to be offering you a choice. You can receive a book for your pledge of support, or you can receive an actual weekend workshop for your pledge of support. And this is one way for you to say, I am worth it. I am valuable. I have something in me that is wanting to be expressed and released in the world. And the reason that it's important is because when we suppress and deny ourselves the opportunity to truly express and be in the fullness of who we are, that's when all of our systems start to shut down. WBAI Radio. So I am going to offer you this opportunity. And we're going to go into the first part of this interview, and we'll be back in just a moment. Remember, the number to call is 212-209-2950.
Tom Berg is the author of 27 books, including the number one Amazon bestseller, You Can Write Your Book in a Weekend. He is also the inspiration and guidance behind over 20 of his authors landing places as Amazon bestsellers in just the last year. Tom is an author's oracle, a crystal clear, heartfelt voice. According to the New York Times, 81% of us who feel we have books stuck inside. Tom's books and lectures are direct, to the point, and always entertaining, offering us exactly what we need to overcome the obstacle of writing and publishing in the easiest, most successful, and effective ways possible. Over the last three decades, Tom has shared his Tom Berg method with over 80,000 aspiring authors at more than 120 of the finest colleges and universities in the U.S., including the College of William and Mary, Duke University, and the University of Arizona. And he is a facilitator of a really interesting event. They are weekend retreats in which you can learn to write your own book, will actually write your own book. So I want to welcome you, Tom, to WBAI and Heart of Mind Radio.
Thank you, Catherine. It's marvelous to be here this evening.
Yes, and I found your book to be different than any other book I've read, really, on the art of writing, I have to say.
I can see why.
Yeah, and it was really compelling because I can see how much your work is tied into your own soul's purpose, your own soul journey. And I was really quite surprised that you had such, well, from my perspective, a difficult childhood. But at the same time, that difficult childhood almost brought you directly into the path that is most exemplified in the work that you're doing now. And I would really like to start with that.
Oh, I'd love to start with that. You know, I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. And, you know, my belief is that we choose our parents. And we choose our parents for specific soul reasons to bring us the greatest chance of advancement. And it wasn't that I overcame the disabilities of my family. They actually led me to my success. You see, at an early age, the child, if not the infant, transfers their belief in God to the parents. My parents were so overwhelmed with the dysfunction of their relationship that they were emotionally absent in our relationship, their relationship with me. So I kind of held on to that connection, direct connection with God. And as a result, yes, that did lead me to my success because I believe that the Almighty God, Source, whatever you want to call He, She, or It, has been my guide and my parent. And my parents provided me with that opportunity because of their dysfunction of the relationship. So I don't think we can underrate the value of dysfunctionality.
Well, that's good news because I think we all have it somewhere in our lives.
Oh, God, yes, we do. No pun intended. Yes, we all do.
What really struck me when you were speaking about this in your book, Right from God, is that when you say that you didn't transfer your identification of God to your parents, it remained with God, you described this in a way that was really very tangible, in almost to the point that it made me feel, well, that to me seems like a much better option. Could you describe what this feeling was and that you carried on pretty far into your young adult life, this relationship, this direct relationship with God?
Well, you know, I didn't realize that it was abnormal to speak to God and be heard and hear a reply back until my adolescence. And I just started to describe some of that to my friends and realized that they didn't have the same experience. And my initial response was feeling odd or weird or strange. And then when I really stopped and looked at it, I thought it was really beautiful. I mean, I've always made time to speak to and hear God's response to me. I feel that God is next to me all the time. And I don't approach God always in the most respectful moods. I approach He or She in the most honest moods. I've never felt alone. You know, I like my own company, and I've never ever felt alone. Even though my family was fractured, dysfunctional, I never felt alone because I always felt God's presence right next to me. So helping people connect back to God, commune directly with God through the writing of books is just a natural outpouring of what I do naturally on my own and what I've experienced my whole life.
Mm-hmm. And I connected with that. I resonated with it. I can't say that I had that feeling well into my adolescence, but I do remember at very early age having this relationship with the, one might think of as the invisible world, the divine world.
Yeah.
And I remember as a child having conversations with what I interpreted at the time as angels. But
yeah.
As I grew up, I kind of lost that sensitivity. And I think that there's a very good chance that there are vast numbers of people who might have had such experiences as small children, but once they begin to recognize that it wasn't an approved mode of being, that energy or that connection was shut down. So
yes.
I believe part of what you're speaking about in your book, Right from God, is a way of reawakening that within us. It's about writing a book, but it's also about reawakening this connection. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that.
Sure. You know, it's according to the New York Times, there was an article done in the Times about 7 or 8 years ago, and the Times ran a survey to see how many Americans really felt that they wanted to write a book, because they were amazed initially with how many people spoke about writing a book at some point in their lives. And they came back with the estimate that 81% of Americans believed that they had a book stuck inside them that they needed to get out. And through my teaching, and I've learned so much more from my students than I think they've learned from me over the years. I've been working with new authors for about 32 years now. One of the things I really found out was that the reason people really want to write books is because it's the divine's way of re-communing directly with us and helping us return to an innate spiritual state of being that makes everything possible, including feeling love for ourselves.
And I do believe that this is something that is very much longed for in our culture, that reconnection back to something that's meaningful. And in your book, you speak about how writing can be a process of healing and transforming your own life. And can you tell us how that works?
Sure, of course. Well, what I've discovered too, Catherine, is that the reason people want to write is because there are books, like the Times says, stuck inside them trying to get out. And what I've been able to ascertain is that these books are actually written on the other side of life. And so they're spiritual entities. And as a result, when you connect directly with them, and that's what I really teach people to do, is connect directly with their books. I don't teach them to write them. I don't teach them how to write a book. I teach them how to connect with a book that's already there. When they connect with that, since the book is a spiritual entity, the essence, the white light, the healing energy of God comes pouring through with the words of the book, and as a result, the author heals. And I've seen people heal from physical disabilities, relationship dysfunctions, frustration, anger, abuse, just through the writing of their books. And I believe what really happens is when the spiritual entity of a book enters into a human being, it makes room for itself by pushing out all the dysfunction and all the pain, all the anger, all their unresolved issues, number one. And number two, cleans that space and heals that space so it to better take residence on its own. And that's where the healing transpires. It's much like what happened with Moses on the Mount when the power of God came into him and he became healed. He became a leader. He became forgiven. And I believe that's exactly what happens when we write books as well, too.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. And in your book, you speak of writing a book has similarities to giving birth to a child. And
yes.
I was wondering if you could speak about that.
You know, my daughter's 10 years old now, and we went through a natural birth process with a midwife. And when you do that, you meet with a midwife every 2 weeks, and it's more than just a physical checkup. It's a spiritual and emotional checkup, and the midwife spends sometimes hours with you explaining the birthing process and talks to you about the emotional things that you go through. And all the time that I was going through this preparation with this midwife for the birth of our daughter, I could see that there were distinct similarities between the gestation and the birth process of a human child and that of a book. And they're very similar in certain ways, not only the birthing and gestation process, but what's very similar is the child as a person of its own. The child may biologically be ours, but the child is its own soul and is born to live its own life. And our job is to guide it and love it along its way. And it's the same thing I find with a book. A book has its own personality, has its own purpose, has its own goals, and our job is to nurture it and love it and protect it along the way. So I see a distinct similarity between the two birthing processes. So when I work with a new author, I treat them as if they are giving birth to an actual being, which we refer to as a book. And I nurture them the way a midwife would nurture a collection of parents through the process as well, too.
And now a short reading from the book Right from God, You, Words, Writing, and Your Divine Purpose by Tom Bird. It was late on a warm summer evening, around 2 a.m., when I exited my parents' house. As I so often did to slip into the solace of the night, where the ultimate quiet could be found, where I would also find the clearest of all channels available to me to better hear God. All of us have the ability to communicate directly with God. We can all feel God, who is always reaching out to us in feelings, visions, dreams, lyrics to songs, whatever. I feel God communicating to me in a variety of ways, and due to my dysfunctional upbringing, I may feel it more than most. On the whole, I am more kinesthetic by nature. My ability to feel things outdoes the effect of even the visions I see in my mind. So the most natural and effective form of communication between God and me is through the feelings I had. So it was, on this one summer evening, the sound of the leaves on the tall willows that surrounded our yard gently blowing in the wind, I laid down, relaxing into the soft grass of my parents' side yard, and gazed into the clear night sky. I was so used to communicating with God on late nights such as this one, I couldn't have felt any more comfortable that evening with myself, with everything around me, or especially in my connection with God. I couldn't have felt any more at ease or at home. That evening, as so often before, I came to that communing with something on my heart. In most cases, I wouldn't recognize what it was that the Almighty and I would be communing, feel its emotional weight. On that specific evening, I could tell that I would be dealing with an issue of extraordinarily great significance. As I laid there softly and calmly, I could feel the issue for that evening gradually enter into my consciousness. In response, I felt my body embrace it, and immediately I saw an image appear in my mind. My family, their lifestyles, and our family home. Off to the side, away from them, I stood, as if I was separate from them. It was this vision and the feeling it stirred in me that catalyzed the topic for that evening to arise in my consciousness. And though it entered gently, it was still a big issue. It came in at full force, which helped me to realize the magnitude of what was entering me. At that exact moment, the topic of discussion for that evening between God and me became crystal clear. At that moment that I had been struggling with this age-old issue my entire life, It was at that time, too, that the words came. I am so different from my family, God, that it scares me, causing me to wonder if somehow a mistake had been made. And I was delivered. They're good people, and I love them, but we are just so different. They are focused on paying bills, and I tend to be focused on what I feel is a different, bigger purpose. And the simple act of making money just doesn't seem to be enough fulfilling to me. Which brings me to the following concerns, Lord. My goals in life appear so different from those of my family that I tend to question the validity of what it is that I want to do with my life. I question why it is that I want to write. I feel unworthy to do so, and if the influence of the family I was born into is an indicator of the direction I am meant to follow with my life, then I shouldn't be even considering writing as a profession. At that moment, I could feel that God had been waiting for what seemed like an eternity for me to bring this subject to the table. Thus, the initial response I felt to my question came in the form of a heavenly sigh, as if God was saying something to the effect of, "Thank God, ha ha, that he has finally brought this topic to bear with me." It was as if God's words were moving through me like a melody, vibrating through a tuning fork, strong yet soft and crystal clear. I felt God's response. "Tom," the message stopped a moment for emphasis. "The reason you are drawn to write is because you see life as such a beautiful thing. And when you write, the people who read your writing will be able to see life through your eyes and how you see it." The effect of those simple, direct words of the communion that night still ring true for me today. As I write this, I recall how I felt that night, almost as if I were back there, right here, right now. And that was the first segment of the interview that I shared with Tom Bird, author of Write From God. And the book is called, it has the words write, W-R-I-T-E, that's crossed out, and then it says write, R-I-G-H-T, Write From God, You, Words, Writing, and Your Divine Purpose by Tom Bird. And we are offering you this book as a thank you gift for your pledge to WBAI Radio. And you can make a pledge of $75 by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And along with your copy of the book, Write From God, you will also receive a bonus with links that lead you to this bonus. It is the New Age of Publishing webinar video, a video of one of Tom Bird's writing weekend webinars, Write Your Bestseller in a Weekend. So it'll be one of the videos from the webinar. A video of one of Tom Bird's Write From God class webinars, and a collection of articles and videos featuring valuable information on what is trending in the area of writing about and or book publishing, and also a document, The Seven Principles of Writing. And this will come as part of your premium, a bonus when you pledge $75 for the book, Write From God, You, Words, Writing, and Your Divine Purpose. The number to call is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. I actually found this conversation very inspiring, and I have been doing a lot more writing since I had a conversation with Tom Bird. The other premium we're offering you today is participation in his seminar. And it is a webinar. It takes place in Sedona, New Mexico. So for your pledge of $495, you can participate in this webinar, this seminar. And it is, we only have a limited availability. I believe we have 8 left. We offered this the last drive. We have 8 left. So only 8 of you will have the opportunity to attend this workshop. And the beauty of it is that it's an ongoing schedule. So there's one happening at the end of February, at the end of March, and again at the end of August. And it continues a few more times throughout the year. So you would be able to schedule that weekend in accordance with your own needs, your own schedule. And the workshop occurs on Thursday from 4:30 till 9:30 p.m. And this is a suggested preparatory part of the workshop, not mandatory. But the full flow of the workshop will go from Friday, 7:30 a.m. till 6:30 p.m., Saturday p.m., and Sunday from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. So you can register into this workshop, and you can view it online. It is a full webinar. Hopefully, we'll have a moment to speak a bit more about that in our interview. But first, I must wait for your phone calls at 212-209-2950. So you have 2 points of focus. You might want to pledge at the $75 level, and you'll receive the book Right From God, You, Words, Writing, and Your Divine Purpose with Tom Bird. Plus, you'll receive the bonus, which gives you access to a number of videos and information about writing your own book. And the beauty of this process is that it all happens in a weekend, and it's a cathartic process where you really dive into it without obstructing your flow, without having the mind interfere with this message that's been in you and is prepared and ready to be delivered into the world. I love the way Tom talks about it, like delivering a baby is how we create a project, a book, something into the real world. The number is 212-209-2950. Pledge at the $75 level for the book, Right From God, and the workshop, Fly High Weekend Writing Retreat is what it's called, with Tom Bird, T-O-M-B-I-R-D. Fly High Weekend Writing Retreat with Tom Bird. And we're asking you for a pledge of $495. Now, these retreats do have a value of twice that. You could go to Tom Bird's website and get it right online. But the beauty of this gift is that he has actually donated to WBAI these opportunities for you to enjoy this retreat. So when you pledge here at WBAI, it is a full donation. This goes completely to the resource and upliftment and moving forward of our great radio station. And there's nothing more to do but make that donation. Your information, please leave your email. We'll connect you with the workshop. You'll be able to schedule the weekend that is most appropriate for your schedule. So it's a beautiful opportunity. There's a limited number. For those of you who know you have something to bring into the world, who have been thinking, maybe chewing on these ideas, but haven't had the focus, the direction, the inspiration, the support to be able to give birth to your book. Well, now you do have it. If you call 212-209-2950 for your pledge of $495, you can attend this amazing writing retreat. Fly High Weekend Writing Retreat with Tom Bird. The epicenter of your success as an author lies within you being able to first generate and then blend with the literary inspiration, which is the lifeblood of your book. So this incredible workshop seminar will guide you through this process of connecting to your soul's message, to the wisdom of your being, and pulling it into a full book. He guides you to write the book. He guides you to edit the book. And then he helps you to prepare for publishing. It's a beautiful opportunity for those of you who have something, a gift to bring into the world and were wondering about how this was going to happen. This is a great opportunity for you to do it. These kind of writing retreats can be very, very expensive. But we're offering it to you at a discount from the total value, and Tom Bird has actually donated these positions in his workshop to WBAI. It's a pledge of $495 when you call 212-209-2950. We only have 8 of them. So if you have this inspiration, jump on it. Do this. It's something that is going to be special. It will transform your life. And as Tom described, it's a healing process, and it's a process of coming into balance and coming into the fruit of your purpose here on the planet. 212-209-2950, you, words, writing, and your divine purpose. Again, the workshop is $495. And you can make that pledge at 212-209-2950. You can also go to the website, give2wbai.org, and you can just put the name in the search bar, Tom Bird, B-I-R-D, and you'll find both the weekend retreat and the book, Write From God. The weekend retreat, Fly High Weekend Writing Retreat with Tom Bird, for your pledge of $495. If you want the book and you want to work on this in your own time, it's only a $75 pledge of support. And that's pretty amazing when you think about it. A $75 pledge will offer you the book, Write From God, Tom Bird, and you also will receive the links to videos. There are 3 videos: the publishing, the New Age of Publishing webinar video of one of Tom Bird's writing weekends, write your bestseller in a weekend, so you'll have that in combination with the book itself, a video of Tom Bird's Write From God class webinar, so you'll get even a taste of the actual webinar for your $75 pledge, a collection of articles and videos featuring invaluable information on what is trending in the arena of writing and or book publishing, plus the 17 principles of writing. That comes to you as a bonus, and you'll have access to these. There are links that you can get to online, and it will support your work as you work to write your own book, connecting to your own divine purpose through these exercises and through the inspiration of Tom Bird. Again, the number is 212-209-2950. We're only going to be here till the top of the hour, and then we're going to go to another program. So please do make this phone call. Don't hesitate to get involved in this process. We all know that we have come here with something very special to share, and this is your opportunity to be true to yourself. You, words, writing, and your divine purpose. Write From God by Tom Bird. It's only a $75 pledge for WBAI, and your pledge goes a long, long way towards supporting the radio station. We have unlimited numbers of these books to offer you, and along with the bonus information, but in order to receive that, make your phone call 212-209-2950. Write From God, you, words, writing, and your divine purpose. The New York Times says that 81% of Americans believe that they have books stuck inside of them, that they just have to get out. Now, what if that vast number of people are actually being drawn by source to do so? So your inspiration is coming from your own soul, from deep within you. Do we want to just live the world as a mindless drone or puppet? Don't we want to break free of the hustle and the bustle and the hamster wheel life and connect to that deepest part of our being? And from that deepness, we can inspire our creativity, our activities, and our life. It's a wonderful opportunity to use this as an opportunity to make that deep connection, to sustain it, and to bring forth its creative impulses. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. This book, Right From God, provides insight into the transformative process that provides as much, if not more, benefit to the writer as it does to the reader. Byrd cites actual case histories of his authors and how the book writing allowed them to clear years of emotional and physical pain. Byrd, who now has dozens of books to his name, started out much like this. Authors with a burning desire to write a book. So this is, we heard a little bit about how that inspiration came out of his childhood troubles, about having a disconnect from his own parents, allowed him as a young child to make that deeper inner connection, and it has carried him a long way. Well, we all really start out that way as small children, but we get lost. We get lost in the shuffle of our society that does not want to acknowledge the beauty that lies inside of each one of us. But I'm asking you to recognize your own beauty, to acknowledge that you have this deep inspiration within you, and to do something about it. Bring it forth. Allow it to the process to heal you, and then move beyond that to offer your wisdom to the rest of us. 212-209-2950 is your number to call. Only a $75 pledge, Right From God, You Words Writing, and Your Divine Purpose. $75 for the book, Right From God, and for the incredible weekend, it's a pledge of $495 for the, it's 4 days where you'd be tapped in to this writing retreat, Fly High Weekend Writing Retreat with Tom Byrd, a $495 pledge. And you make that commitment to get in there and do this work. And at the end of it, you will have a book. You will be a changed human being. You will have plugged into that deepest part of yourself. It's an opportunity that we really should not miss. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. And I'm going to play a little bit more for you. We only have another 15 minutes, really, for you to make that pledge and connect with what we're doing here at WBAI in terms of our fundraising. But this is rather unique. It's rare. And it's only with you at this moment. It'll be gone in 15 minutes, so please make your phone call, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, Write From God, You Words Writing, and Your Divine Purpose. We very often get attracted to these human potential books and spiritual books, and we're always reading somebody else's words. Well, isn't it time we pay attention to the wisdom and the message that lies within our very own being? This is what you can do for yourself, and the premium, the gift I'm offering you today are tools to assist you in reaching into that deep part of yourself. 212-209-2950. We're going to go to another bit of this clip, and hopefully you will be inspired, and we won't be able to hear too much of it. Again, that number is 212-209-2950. And we're going to go back to our interview with Tom Byrd.
One of the things that I also found very compelling about your book is that when you speak about going back to the notion that, 87% of people feel that they have a book in them, but they don't follow that path, and they feel like either they can't write a book or they've wasted their life and it's too late to write a book.
Sure.
Can you speak to that timing that you explain in the book, that how people can resolve some of this doubt?
Sure. There's several components to that. The New York Times said 81% of Americans felt they had a book stuck inside them that they needed to get out. I actually believe that 100% of all human beings have books stuck inside them that they need to get out. There's this 81% that we're willing to admit that. And oftentimes, authors come to my retreats feeling a tremendous amount of remorse and shame over the fact that they've been wanting to write for sometimes over 50 years and then not yet penned that book. And what I tell them is, just because they had a premonition 50 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago or 10 years ago that they were meant to write a book does not mean they were meant to write that book at that time. Now is the time to write the book. So I also tell them, when the student is ready, the teacher is shown. So the reason they're in my company and the reason I'm in their company is because it's their time. So I actually believe procrastination is a good thing, because the major fault of our educational system in regards to writing is they teach it as an intellectual perspective only. They forget the spiritual, emotional, and physical content of it, so they make it very difficult to align those four aspects of a human being in alignment and in connection with the book for the book to be born. So procrastination, to me, is just a wise human being waiting for the right time for a book to be born. I don't see it as a bad thing. And when it is the right time, the author either has the choice of writing that book, and the right time, I mean divine timing, when that message and that author is really meant to be born. That author has the choice of either writing that book and taking the next step in spiritual evolvement, or to live a relatively tortured lifestyle from that point forward. Because we do have free will on this earth. We have the choice of being able to negate any promises we made before we got here. But that doesn't mean there's not potentially painful perspectives as a result of that. And so there is a right time. And I assume that when a person enters into one of my retreats, it's their time, that's why they're there, and it's my time, and that's why they're there. And I had a conversation with God about 30 years ago, after I'd been teaching 2 years, and I said, God, I'm going to continue to teach because I believe I'm the one you want to share this message, that you want to share this inheritance with writers everywhere, and I'll continue to do that. But I need to ask you for a favor, God. Please don't send me any green apples, because I really can't help the remedial, and I don't care if that apple comes to me and they're slightly bruised or slightly bent or a little bit disformed. I can only help those who are ready. And that was 30 years ago, Catherine, and I'll be honest with you, I don't remember anyone that's entered into my retreats in that period of time who was not ready. Now, ready means ready to embrace their soul desire to write a book for whatever reason. Most of the people that come into my retreats led by desperation than faith, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think desperation is the forefather to faith. And when they show up on my retreats, they're not confident, they're anxious, they want to get it done with, they have no idea what they're going to write, but the thing is, they're there. And I think it was Einstein said 98% of success is just showing up, but they've shown up. Their desperation has gotten them to the point where they're sick of the pain, they want to get rid of the pain, they want to live their purpose, and they're ready. So that's when the divine timing comes in. And in divine timing, you know, God sees us from a much higher perspective than we see ourselves. He or she sees us as something that we do not believe we can achieve. So divine timing often equates to a vulnerability in our ends, opening up a vulnerability of undeservability. We don't feel we're deserving to write a book or to be a best-selling author because we've been trained to diminish ourselves, to protect ourselves from the vulnerability that famous authors and actors and actresses experience. And when the divine timing hits and the author goes with it, they go through a period of vulnerability. It's a result of undeservability that they feel about themselves. But it's God leading them beyond that vulnerability and leading them beyond that undeservability to become who they really are and who they're really meant to be. And that's the only way I've found that someone who is blessed with a book inside them can have the peace as a human being that they deserve.
Mm-hmm. And also you speak about, and this sort of reflects back to the comparison to a birth, but that there is a pre-birth agreement, some kind of soul design or soul agreement or message that is seeking to come through you in this book, whatever it might be. So could you speak to that relationship of where this is coming from, that's coming through you?
Sure. I really think life is a lot more than just having two cars, a mortgage, and raising a few dysfunctional kids. I think we're all messengers, you know. The definition of an angel is a messenger. And I feel we all are angels incarnate in human form. And our job is to come to this earth and leave a valuable message behind. Now, that valuable message may be projected as humor, as sadness, as wisdom, as a lesson in nonfiction books and fiction books and children's books and screenplays. But we're meant to leave this message behind in a tangible form, and we're meant to birth it through our voices, our spiritual soul voices. And so what we structure on the other side of life is what we're meant to bring through to life at the right time. And that is embodied in most authors as their books. It doesn't mean that we're not supposed to be great parents and good friends and good siblings, but there's something beyond those relationships that goes to a relationship with God and our relationship with God and our relationship as angels, as messengers. And whether a book makes people laugh or think or cry or all of the above, it delivers a message through a certain voice and through a certain tone, which is necessary to make the choir of life complete. Mm-hmm. And until we all write our books, that choir of life is missing too many members and never sounds quite as it should sound. And so that's why it's important that if any of you listeners out there feel that you have a book stuck inside you, or people around you are telling you you should write a book, it's important to listen. Listen to yourself, listen to them, and act on it. And realize that if you've had some difficult times writing a book or you feel undeservable, there's nothing wrong with you. There's absolutely nothing wrong with you. Writing is an innate art form. It's a completely innate art form. You're returning to an innate spiritual art form. If you're having a difficult time, there's just something wrong with the system you've been employing. There's nothing wrong with you. And I was at that point in my life when I was 24 years old. I was a publicist for the Pittsburgh Pirates big league baseball team. And I was very good at what I did, but I was not living my purpose. I was not the author I wanted to be, and for the simple reason was is because I'd tried everything orthodox, everything I could read, everything I'd been taught, I'd learned about writing. I'd applied, and nothing was working. And so I went down on my knees one night and talked to God and said, I've tried everything down here to become the author I feel I already am, and nothing works. I know there's a method. I can't find it. If you show it to me, I promise you I'll spend the rest of my life showing it to other people so no one has to suffer as badly as I've been suffering the last few years trying to find this method. Two nights later, I woke up in the middle of the night, Catherine, and woke up from the dream, part in a dream state, part in a waking state, and I could see exactly what I had to do to become the author that I was meant to be. And I put it into play. Sold my first book 6 weeks later to Harper & Row, which was at the time the third largest publisher in the world. I tripled my salary and quit my job weeks later.
Hmm.
And I realized that I'd been given a gift. I've been given a gift that was for all of us, and part of my job was to share that system with other people so they could realize their own divinity and their own purpose, their own voice, and their own message through the writing of their books. And that's what I...
And that's all the time we have to share this offer with you today. So please do make that phone call if you have found that inspiration, or if you understand that you also have this book inside you. Make the phone call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. We are going to move on to the next broadcast for you. You'll also hear the voice of Catherine along with Gudrun Penselin. We're going to be focusing on the herbal pharmacy, and this is your opportunity to take action with regard to your health. Remember that you can continue making those phone calls at 212 209-2950-212, 209-2950, and we will allow you to, we will thank you, I should say, for your donation of $75 with the book, Write From God, You, Words, Writing, and Your Divine Purpose by Tom Bird. That number is 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and we have a limited number of the Fly High Weekend Writing Retreat with Tom Bird for your pledge of $495 when you call 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Please do stay tuned, and we will be sharing with you yet another great opportunity to make a transformative difference within your life.
If you compare elephant testicles and human testicles, elephant anatomy makes more sense. If you compare squid eyes to human eyes, squid anatomy makes more sense. Whales' throats make more sense than human throats. The animal kingdom is full of anatomy that is better than ours. Find out why on Ken Gale's Ecologic when he interviews Dr. Abby Hafer at the special time of 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, February 16th, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
This is Phil Donahue. I have 600 channels in my home, but 400 of them are selling the Bowflex machine. That's why I listen to WBAI New York.
Welcome to WBAI 99.5 FM. My name is Tony Bates. My in-studio guest is Kyle Cease. Kyle is now a keynote speaker, transforming audiences through his unique blend of transformation. He's been a guest speaker at colleges, summits, and Fortune 500 conferences, including at Agape International, GATE, Revelations, Sun Valley Wellness Festival, Sedona World Wisdom Days, and the Longevity Now Conference, among others. In addition to leading his own Evolving Out Loud live events, he has spoken with renowned personalities and teachers such as Eckhart Tolle, Jim Carrey, Michael Beckwith, Louis C.K., Tony Robbins, Deepak Chopra, Mary Morrissey, David Wolfe, and thousands more. Kyle Cease, welcome to WBAI, and thank you for joining us in our fund drive and our efforts to support WBAI as the Pacifica station here in New York. This is a thing that we do every few months in order to sustain these stations and keep us commercial free.
So, yeah, and thank you for having me and showing me it's time for me to update my bio.
Who anyway, gave it to you?
Some guy in the street, like, you want the other half of Kyle's bio?
I see. So that's an old bio. So why don't you update us? Let's start with who is Kyle Cease and what brings you to WBAI? Let's start with who Kyle Cease is. Like I just said, you started out as a comedian. What was that part of your life like?
Wow. Well, and I realized as I said that I just compared my accomplishments to you winning a Grammy, which is also egoic of me. But now it's too late. It's already happened.
And maybe you're planning.
Yeah. No, that's me. I'm doing an exercise where I make my future my past. So I started doing stand-up when I was a little kid. I was actually doing clubs when I was 12, 13, 14. And comedy has always been something that I've just been obsessed with and loved, and did it in elementary school, and was a headlining comic around 18. You know, I was touring clubs and going on the road a lot and starting to be a national headlining comic at 18. Booked the movie 10 Things I Hate About You at 19, then moved to LA, booked a movie called Not Another Teen Movie, had eventually toured from those movies. I ended up touring as a comic for colleges. In all of my 20s, I probably did somewhere between 800 to 1,000 colleges. I ended up headlining comedy clubs all over the road, and then ended up having two number one Comedy Central specials. I had a half-hour special and then an hour. And my life as a comedian was just incredible. I just lived on the road. And all the colleges, by the way, they're all in the middle of nowhere for some reason. They tell these kids, don't drink and don't hook up with anyone and don't do drugs. And then they make it so they have to. Like every college, you have, it's two flights away from, like, you have to get on the smallest plane. I'm like, I'm seat 2A and I'm in the back, you know, seat 1A is first class. And there's a guy holding the propeller like it's rubber banded, just waiting to let go of the plane. So I lived on the road. And when you're touring, a lot of times you don't get sleep and you don't get to eat well, and you live in this way. And at the time, I really thought who I was a comedian. You know, when I went on stage, I got a lot of love if I had these little weapons of comedy and the, you know, kind of minimal fame that comes from being a comedian and touring in these clubs. And at one point, I ended up touring so much that I got an exhaustion. I, you know, had not got any sleep, all these different things. And I thought, oh, this exhaustion is going to ruin my comedy career. And I thought, who I am as a comedian. So all of a sudden, I was, you know, really pushing, trying to make my comedy career keep going, even though really my body needed to rest. And I didn't know that at the time. So this kind of anxiety started showing up, and I created a stage fright after 15 years of being a comic that basically got so extreme and so big that it grew to the point where I couldn't walk anymore.
Wow.
I was scared. Basically, my thought, I would go on stage and I would just do my shows in my sleep. I could go on stage and do my act, and I wasn't creating anything new. And I really believe if your mind only is always creating, and even if it's not a good thing, your mind is always creating. And if you don't keep choosing to create, your mind will creatively sabotage you. And we get anxieties all the time and fears that are very creative. If you've ever gone to a job interview and you're thinking, what if I throw up on the desk? You know, that's your mind coming up with a brilliant problem. It's coming up with a sabotage and something scary. So my mind, out of boredom one day, I thought to myself, I wonder if I could think about it enough, if I could make myself faint. And then I just started worrying, you can't not think about something. And then I thought, my mind's going to keep doing it, and then I'm going to faint on stage, and who I am is a comedian, so I won't be worth anything. And life became just trying to stay standing on the stage, and then eventually just trying to stay standing in life. And I would wake up in the morning horrified. It's a very creative thing. Everyone who has an anxiety, it's always like, I'm just worried that this hamburger is going to float in the room, and it's going to be on my head, and I'll be Dr. Hamburger Head for 4 months, and everyone will hate me. And it's never just like, you know, I'm scared I won't do well. It's always some bizarre, specific creative thing. And in that anxiety, I understood quite a bit why people get into drugs, why people get into certain things, because, you know, when you have this high pressure, you have a show in 3 months, let's say I'm going to do Letterman or some late night show, mm-hmm. and you're thinking, don't blow it. Mm-hmm. All you're trying to do is figure out how to get in the moment, because your mind thinks that who you are is that entertainer. And I believe very much that we all think we're certain things. Like, I think that I'm my body, or I think that who I am is my spouse or my bank account or my credits. And when you think that's who you are, Wayne Dyer says, well, then when that goes away, then who you are also goes away. Mm. And so we strain and we try to really create an identity that who we are is this thing, because we get a lot of false love from that thing. We get a lot of approval for that thing. I'm this Lamborghini. Now people like me. I'm the, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, you were a successful comedian. How does that come to play for you? You start early. You're headlining at 18. Where does this anxiety come from when your career is in such a upward trajectory?
Well, I would say one thing that is for sure for me is that I learned how to be a comedian before I learned how to be a person. You know, being a comic as a little kid and then learning that that's an avenue you have that gets love, and there's 300 people a night that tell you how great you are and give you approval, and people flirt with you and they give you all these things, you suddenly link to yourself without realizing you're linking it. When I go on stage, I get love. So when I perform, I get love. When I'm on, I get love, you know? And so you just start creating this identity that that's who you are. And for me, what had to happen was that needed to fall apart. That comedy needed to fall apart and all these different things. Because at one point, I started studying what caused the anxiety and learning how to change my thinking. So when I had this anxiety, this was in 2004, I just started thinking, I'm going to make myself faint when I'm on stage, and that'll ruin my comedy career. And while I was at the height of it, I booked my first Comedy Central appearance, and my manager said, don't blow it. Mm. And I just thought, how could I blow it? And I was like, what if I faint on this Comedy Central thing? And so I spent 3 months horrified that I would do it, because I thought that I've for 15 years been working on my act, and all of a sudden I get this one shot and that's going to blow it, and that's the end of who I am. And so for 3 months I worried so much that it just became the worst experience ever. Get to the day of doing the special, I do an 8-minute set in 5 minutes because I rush through it, because the only thing I'm thinking when I'm on stage is don't faint. I walk off stage. I'd run through my act. My feet were turned in. I was holding the mic stand to save my life. But luckily, the act came through so fast that apparently the crowd still liked it, and Comedy Central gave me my own half-hour special with 3 months' notice. The girl I was dating at the time goes, "Oh, no." And I said, "What?" And she goes, "Well, now I'm going to hear you worry about fainting on the Comedy Central special for the next 3 months." And so the next day after the breakup, I picked up a book. This was the beginning of my transformation. Now, this is not where I am now. I'm in a much deeper place, but this is the start of it. This is how I went from a victim of my circumstances to learning that I can change my circumstances, and became this achiever type person. So we learn a lot of times when we achieve things, you can change your circumstances. You can get the number one Comedy Central special. You can get the woman. You can get the guy. You can have the ultimate relationship. But the problem with that later becomes you're still thinking your happiness is in your circumstances. You're changing them, but you're still a victim to them. So there's this world of people that achieve a lot of things and a lot of times aren't happy. They're just going, what's next, what's next, what's next? But at least you can change your circumstances, right? So the first place is I think the world is knocking me down. I'm in this place where I think the world is doing things to me. The second place is this whole thing's run by me. Right. So you can achieve. I'm going to have the biggest business in the world. I'm going to be number one. So I got to go from to me to by me by just thinking, how can I have the number one Comedy Central special? And that immediately changed my thinking from I hope I don't faint when I'm on stage to having a new vision. Now, as I said, this isn't where I live now, because there's an even more effortless, deeper connected place that moves much faster. But I needed to go through this. So for 3 months, I started jumping up and down and just picturing that I had the number one Comedy Central special. Cut to 3 months later, I've lost a bunch of weight, made a bunch of money, and then I did have the number one Comedy Central special. So for the next 3 years, I started learning that if I change my thinking and focusing on what I do want, that I will achieve it. Like, you know, this is basic The Secret. This is basic motivational stuff. Picture what you do want. Now, this isn't where I live now, as I said, but I did go through a few years of just going, how can I have the number one this? How can I have the top Comedy Central special? And for 3 years, I achieved a lot of things that I really wanted. And it was really exciting. And then when you go from that first place to that second place, you kind of release blame. You know, most people in a victim mentality, they're blaming their outside circumstances. I'm mad because of the government or what my parents said or what my ex did.
Well, you don't have to put me on blast, Kyle.
Yeah, you know, it's mainly you that I'm talking about. But the second stage, you remove blame and you take responsibility and you go, okay, it's not those things. It's my perception of those things. And you go, how can I do this? How can I do that? Now, in that stage, you achieve a lot of things, but you also can be a total control freak, because you're in this world where your happiness is in your circumstances and you think constantly, when something happens, I'll be happy.